What is it media people tell us these days? How many times you have to repeat something to have it really seep into somebody's consciousness? What is it? It used to be 7. I think it's double that now. Repeat, 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 and keep repeating. And why is that? Because so many things are coming at us and we have to filter to kind of keep our sanity. We can rebuff things that don't come with repetition. Well, it seems like the ancients knew this rule as well. I don't know if you noticed, I appreciate the way Alan arranged those screens, the Old Testament text particularly. Did you notice how many times the text repeated, "I am the Lord your God"? In that short passage, 5 times. 5 times. They didn't have media in those days. They didn't have Facebook. They didn't have Twitter. They didn't have all those other things. They just had one straight storyline coming from the prophet, and the prophet says it 5 times. I am the Lord, your God. There's something God wants us to note about that, I think, that there is a heed we have to attend to. There's an attentiveness. There is a relationship that God is setting forth. We are God's, but God is ours. And we must recognize the high and the holy and be in concert with the high and the holy. And so the high and the holy, through the voice of Moses, is trying to help us understand what that's supposed to look like, how it's supposed to roll out. How is it we are to be attentive to the Lord our God? Well, there are several pairings in those verses that you heard this morning. You shall not reap to the very edges of your field and go back for gleanings. You're to leave them on the ground. You're not to strip your vineyard, but rather leave behind the grapes that fall or the grapes that do not get picked, and you are to leave them for who? For the poor and the who? And the alien, the refugee, the visitor in the land, someone who isn't you, the other. In the second pairing, he has several short clips. Do not steal, do not deal falsely, do not lie, do not swear falsely by God's name. Don't execute an oath using God's name that you do not intend to keep. That's a profaning of God's name. The third section, do not defraud. You shall not keep yourself to yourself the wages that belong to your laborer. You can't keep them overnight. You can't keep them in earning interest in the bank account so that you delay paying your laborer. You shall not revile the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind. You shall not render unjust judgment. You shall not go around as a slanderer, speaking ill of other people and eroding their reputation. In those 3 sections, we have the prophet speaking to economy, the prophet speaking to trustworthiness, the prophet speaking to justice. And then he concludes with a 4th. Don't hate in your heart any of your kin. Kin in that day extended quite widely. It's not just the nuclear family we're talking about, but an entire clan, and in their case, the people, all 12 tribes. You shall reprove your neighbor. If the neighbor is doing something out of line, you're to reprove them. Otherwise, you incur that guilt on you as well. You don't go silently by letting someone get ever darker and cause disruption and other things that are not in keeping with this litany of expectation. We're responsible for our neighbor, both to love and respect, but also to correct. But how are we to do that? You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge, but rather you're to treat them with blessing, with hesed, with love. Now, we often confuse the idea of love when it's referenced in the Old Testament. It can be an emotional, warm, fuzzy feeling, yes. But it's not just that, or sometimes that's absent altogether. But we choose to treat someone with love, with blessing, seeking their well-being, even sometimes at our own expense. So this has to do with love and blessing, sort of the benediction of all that has been said before. Because all of that, if we have economic fairness, if we are trustworthy and can be honest, and if we execute justice and make sure that those in the margins and those disabled are brought into the entire family and the benefits of the civilization, of the society, then we are acting out of love. We are offering blessing. And that's the promise that God had said through Abraham. If you will be a blessing, you will in turn, through me, be a blessing to all humanity. We have inherited that mandate. We are to be people called into that life of blessing. Holiness here in this passage is defined as living with integrity and displaying one's devotion to God through our daily conduct. How we live out moment by moment matters to who? I am the Lord, your God. In the first verse that Betty read, Moses has called the entire congregation of the people of Israel and issues this statement, "You shall be holy. For I, the Lord your God, am holy." Now, that's intimidating. Who of us would say we are holy, right? Holy means to be set apart, to be sanctified, to be anointed in a way, to be commissioned, to be different than everything else, that we are devoted entirely to God. And we are in right relationship with God. It doesn't mean that all of our foibles and our idiosyncrasies are completely washed away at that moment. What it does mean is that we have committed our lives to be oriented to one angle, to God who is holy, so that God who is holy, being our God, will help us be ever demonstrate more and more the holiness God has already conferred on us. And this is not reserved for people who go through ordination. It's not reserved for great people who end up shifting society and world culture. It's not the Mother Teresa's alone. It's all of us. This congregation standing before Moses is everybody in the country. No one is excused. We are to be holy. And so we are to live out these mandates that are offered to us by our God. And we can use them as a measure to assess the degree to which our broader society is in alignment with them, can't we? It's a call for us to be active and to remain ever vigilant, to be people who seek to push forward, to live out, to give expression to all of these good things, to seek an economic situation that takes everyone into account, that is honest and straightforward and without duplicity, guileless, trustworthy. When you speak, people know you're speaking the truth. They can depend on your word. That we seek to put forward justice, to make sure people have fair wage when they deserve fair wage. No, when they deserve to be paid that fair wage. And you shall not leave out the people who need extra help, but to attend to them. Do not get in their way from thriving. And be just. We're going to get tired this year. We're going to want to closet ourselves off. But keep these things in mind. People who need protection, who have no voice, who are economically deprived need our company and our holy living. And we also need to remember that while our minds might be going to certain populations, there's another population that has felt left out and abandoned and reviled. And they might appear to be our enemy or in opposition to these values when really they probably are not. But they are among the deprived. They are the ones who are not thriving, and they're crying out for help. So that brings us to the next part, the Matthew text. Jesus is doing something very interesting here. He's quoting aspects of the Levitical law. You have heard it said, da-da-da-da-da. And then he adds a but. He adds another layer or a different interpretation to how that's to be loved. You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Earlier law said, fine, that's okay. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who mistreat you. Jesus is addressing the law of retaliation, and it had a good role to play in that era, the ancient era, because if you read the first part of Genesis and you get to a guy named Lamech, who took the idea of vengeance out in an excessive way, there was no balance between the justice he tried to execute on someone in his own mind and the wrong that they had done. It was completely out of balance. We have the flood story. When no one did good, all did evil. So there was a law put into place that said you can execute vengeance, but only in equal measure to the wrong done to you. That was the law of retaliation. An eye for an eye, not an eye for a head or a hand or a leg. It limited revenge. But now Jesus introduces a new equation, a new approach, an approach that depicts active non-retaliation, not retaliating, not seeking vengeance, however just it might be. It's, in a sense, a surprise, an unexpected refusal to play the opponent's game, to go into that arena where they're living, out of which they're reacting. Do not answer an adversarial act with an adversarial act. Instead, concoct, think through, imagine a creative response that extinguishes not that opponent, not that person who wronged you, but the opposition itself, the act itself, not the person. This will break the cycle of vengeance and viciousness. It prevents cementing an enemy on enemy relationship. One of the ways Jesus answered evil was to absorb it, to let it unleash its worst on him and not retaliate. Now, some have used this to say, if you are an abused wife, you just turn the other cheek. You just keep putting up with. Because you set a vow, you're supposed to keep that vow, and you're supposed to yield to whatever meanness somebody else executes on us. This is not that. Because remember back where we're supposed to reprove our neighbor? We're supposed to correct behavior that is out of alignment. We're supposed to speak to it, at least call it out. We are to not enable, even as we absorbed, we are not to enable viciousness on the part of others. We are not to allow ourselves to be party to a repeating pattern of, can I use the word, misbehavior, wrongness, out of sortsness. If that person, upon reproof, does not amend, we can remove ourselves from that situation. But we do it with grace. We do with blessing be upon you. It's how we engage with those differing from our views however far afield they may be from our views. It's how we respond to people acting out of fear or a desire for power. So we are coached here on how to behave in a way with those who might seek to be out of alignment of that earlier text from Leviticus. That we're not to go around pointing our fingers and scolding people, but rather we're supposed to be responding with grace and dignity and blessing, turning love back in the face of evil. There's a wonderful episode. I don't know if any of you are fans of The Orange is the New Black, but in one of the early episodes, Piper, who's been jailed as a result of a relationship with a drug smuggler, I think they were roommates or something, and she got caught up in that, and so she is now in prison. And she unwittingly insults the cook the first time she's at dinner. Well, the cook decides to exact her revenge on Piper by starving her and doing all kinds of nasty things to Piper's meals so that they were unedible. Piper refuses to lash back. But instead, as the episode unfolds, you find her working on something that she's gifted at doing, making an ointment of some sort. And then there's a scene where she shows up in the kitchen. She shows up, and everybody stops working. And everybody's looking at her and looking at the chief cook, wondering what is going to happen. Piper offers this gift to this woman because it's going to help her with something that's been plaguing her. She's answering with grace in the face of retaliation. She's calling it out, but she's doing so in a loving way, giving a gift. She knew she risked getting beaten to a pulp walking into that kitchen. But she went offering a gift. And in this case, it worked. The cook started to amend her ways. And in the end, I think they became pretty good friends. For there's always the hope of turning our enemies or those we're in opposition to into our friends, to come to deeper understanding. And when we can do that, we are living out people of blessing. We are repairers of the breach and the restorers of the streets in which to live. That is our call and charge today, if ever it was. And we've been through other times in our history, yes, when it was called forth then as well, but it is certainly a day now. So all of us, I pray, will examine our hearts. We can't answer it all, we know that. But there are going to be moments that cross our paths day in and day out, little moments that we can take advantage of to answer with blessing, to give a word of encouragement, to express love, to offer to listen and try to understand, not to argue with, and to make a friend and another and another. And there will be times when we are called to rise up and stand on the line and say, "Do not hurt this person." But each of us has to work that out in our own life and heart. We are to be in prayer with the Lord our God, because God is holy, we are to be holy, and we can trust God to help us know what that means for me and each of you. So there's no one blanket answer here, but simply that we will say we will be engaged, we will rise up, and we will be people who try to live out as best we can by the grace of God, a holy, ebullient, wonderful grace. It's sorely needed. It sorely is.